Hey, Senator Senjum, are you here? You are here.
Yes.
Welcome to the committee. First bill, we are back from recess. First bill on the agenda, Senate File 1880. Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And if I could, there is an amendment to this that I believe Senator Eaton's going to offer. It has to do with amending on this bill, which pertains to Dodge County, a similar provision for Clay County. And if we could offer that, we'd get the bill in order.
Is it the A1? I don't have it.
And, Mr. Chairman, it's the A1 amendment.
Senator Eaton moves the A1 amendment. Discussion to the A1 amendment? Or we're just passing it out now?
Okay.
We'll wait just a moment.
Hi. It's okay. I need my space.
Okay. Any discussion to the A1 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of adoption say aye.
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 Opposed, no. Motion prevails. The amendment's adopted. Hey, Senator Senjum, to your bill.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This bill, Senate File 1880, now as amended, has to do with, and we've seen this a number of times before in more recent years in the Senate, a request by a county, in this case counties, to make their recorders appointed positions as opposed to elected positions. For those of us that have been here for a while, this is, again, not a new subject, so I'm not going to expound greatly on it, but I would call upon my witnesses, Mr. Jim Elmquist, I'm sorry, the administrator of Dodge County, and Commissioner Don Gray, also a commissioner in Dodge County, to provide testimony in support of it.
Thank you. Could you state your name for the tape, please?
Jim Elmquist, County Administrator for Dodge County.
Proceed with your testimony. Thank you.
Without going too far into it, it was announced in at the start of this year that our county recorder would be retiring mid-course through this year, and she had made the statement to the county board that she believes that due to eligibility requirements, the pool candidates that would be available to Dodge County and the opportunity for the Dodge County to potentially restructure its departments to a way that would be more efficient in its basis, that it would behoove the county to look towards going to an appointed process. And basically, that's the rationale for what we've approached Senator Senjum for at this point in time.
You have anything? I would concur with that message, and my concern, and I think the board's concern basically, is the pool of eligible people, because of the smallness of our county, we don't have that many people that would fit that position on an elected basis.
It was the belief that if we went to a system where we would have a county board appointed department head, that we would be able to insert the eligibility requirements and draw from a greater pool of candidates by going to an appointed position.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for the witness? Seeing none, would you state your name for the tape, please?
Don Gray, Board Chair, Dodge County.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
Proceed with your testimony.
Well, my comments are very much the same as the administrator's. The county board believes that the pool is insufficient to come up with the right kind of candidate for this position on an elected basis. We've had some experience in another department where the appointed position worked out extremely well, and prior to that, we had people that weren't quite so capable to provide that expertise for us. So we believe this is a good move for the county. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It sounds like a logical request to me. I'm just wondering if you were able to appoint somebody. Now do you have a recorder, and that is their sole job, or do they take any other responsibilities? And with the size of your county, could somebody that you appointed maybe end up doing the recorder's work halftime and then do some other job halftime, so they're kind of sharing? It's a position that covers several areas.
Yes, and Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, the basis of what we're looking to do is to open our options for restructuring those departments, and there is a belief at this point in time that that position may not warrant a full-time status at this. So to answer your question, yes, it's our intention to restructure that position into something that would be more conducive to county business at this point in time, and still meet the statutory obligations of the position requirements.
Okay, thank you.
Any additional questions?
Mr. Chair, I don't know if Senator Langs has any comments on behalf of Clay County, but Clay County is part of this at this point with the amendment.
Senator Langs, do you have anything to add?
Well, this simply allows the county board to appoint the auditor treasurer, and it's a money-saving measure and gives them more flexibility. And I think we have to do that more and more with these local units of government, because we're cutting them constantly. And, of course, the county board is elected by the people, so I would just appreciate your support.
Senator Eaton.
Thank you. Senator Langseth. If I'm understanding you correctly, we're going to have an auditor appointed by the people that they're auditing?
Senator Langford.
Is that not correct? Wouldn't they be...
I suppose that would be correct.
No. Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Rowley.
And you're new, but we had a bill in here last year that the counties are audited by the state auditor, and there was an effort to try and change that so that they could go and hire not their county auditor to do it, but another outside auditing firm. That did not pass last year, but they are not. Their books are currently audited by the state auditor. I believe that's correct. That they have to pay the state auditor to do an audit of their books.
Okay. Mr. Chair, Senator Stumpf, I believe had a similar bill on the floor last year that passed.
Further discussion? Any questions? Senator, who would like to move the bill? Senator Roebling moves that Senate File 1880 be recommended to pass and placed on general orders. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. No. There being motion prevails. The bill is
passed. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
This is the amendment that brings it back.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair and members.
Sure.
Thank you. The next bill we were going to hear was 1664, but the author has requested that that be laid over. 1664 is laid over.
I'm sorry.
Senator Chamberlain. Members, we are waiting for an amendment that needs to be copied. I don't know. Senator Chamberlain, could we start your bill, or would you rather wait for the amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair. This is an education bill, and many of the members on this side of the room were on the Ed Committee when we presented the bill, so they're familiar with it. But it is an education bill, but there's one small section that deals with elections, a petition to change the board, make up the board. So I'll just briefly take 5 minutes to go over this and let you know what it is, and then I'll show you we'll get to the amendment. This bill began last year with Senator Olson. She is the new co-author. Senator Pogemiller and late Senator Scheid were on this bill as well last year, and they're still on the bill as co-authors. It's a good idea. Its time has come, and I, as I said before, it's, I'm glad to have the opportunity to present this idea of education reform. So what this does, the board, the Education Board, says Professional Empowerment Act, creates a vision, creates optimal conditions and opportunities for schools and students to succeed. It empowers professionals to respond to opportunities and student needs. It combines authority and accountability with the choice. Schools have had choice. Parents have had choice. Now it builds a framework for accountability and to work with that choice. It helps districts respond to incentives created by the choice, the parent choice. 20 years ago, Minnesota began charter schools, one of the first states in the nation to do that. Choice can lead to empowerment and can lead to innovation and success. Basically, what this bill does, it by empowering, giving the local boards and teachers some more authority, they can be creative and innovative and thank you, and drive change in the local districts. This is not a mandatory change; it is voluntary, based on. It can be started with the school boards or with a petition by local residents. I'll just read another paragraph. It's voluntary. The type of district management seeks to improve schools by offering a new deal to teachers and principals, giving the professionals and schools full ownership in exchange for accountability. It's driven by the belief that those inside schools know students best, need only be told what to accomplish, not how to do it, and are motivated by ownership and responsibility for their work and their students. An education board would be distinct from a school board and that does not in itself run schools. Instead, the district board oversees performance agreements with the boards, the school sites, and that make decisions for themselves. The schools could be organized through a variety of means, site-governed learning centers, contract alternative, or chartered schools. The goal is it would improve functioning of the board by leveling and by dividing the oversight and running of the schools, and combines accountability authority at the school level. Again, you have a choice with the parents, but now the school's never really had the opportunity to or the structure to deal with that choice. This bill would give them the opportunity to do just that. I don't know if I need to go into all the details. If you want, I can, but we can go to the amendment now if you'd like, Mr. Chair.
Okay, the A3 amendment. Senator Roebling moves the A3 amendment. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A3 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Amendment. Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chair, what this amendment does is, if you go to the bill, page one goes to the definitions and conversions, and what this is dealing with specifically is the conversion. There's two ways that the school can convert, either by school board itself or elected conversion. So specifically, this amendment makes some technical changes and addresses the next section. Subdivision 3, elected conversion, starts on the bottom of page 1. And what this does, it gives the local community and the parents the authority and ability to help drive change in their schools if they so desire. So we give them in this bill the opportunity to petition for a change in school boards. So the first part of the amendment, 1.2, talks about on the top of page 2, changing registered to eligible. That's basically how the language should be according to a statute that council dug up. So that'd be the proper language. And valid to sufficient. It's sufficient is used more in the election language and statutes as opposed to valid. And then the whole piece talks about, the whole election piece talks about eligible voters in any school district may petition the county auditor to convert a school board into an education board. petition must be signed by a number of eligible voters within the district, at least equal to 15% of those voting in the last general election. And so that, and then the next paragraph, upon receipt of the proposal, then they give language that will be on the on the ballot in the school district. In line 2-7, at the end of line 2-7, it strikes 2, and then line 2-8, that's struck completely. And that was taken out simply because that's handled in the election statute, so we don't have to deal with it again here. So that is the piece of the bill that pertains to local government elections. And that's the amendment. That's all I have, Mr. Chair.
Senator Chamberlain, so the members of the education boards are elected the same way as the school board, or is it different?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
So would then the governing boards of each, this sets up site-based boards?
Right, the education board. If a school district chose to go to education board and use this model, they could convert on their own, and then they'd just be called an education board, and then the structure changes, and the schools become one of three site-governed area learning centers or chartered schools. Site-governed schools are basically some of you, that's already in statute that was put there, I think, was it 09? I think it was. And that's already in statute and described in statute. So site-governed schools exist. What this bill will also do, among other things, is facilitate schools and districts converting to site-governed schools. They really never had a reason or ability to do it before, but this bill will allow them to do it. Site-governed schools are basically, I look at it as a operating division of a business. They're given the principals, the head of the school, and the teachers and the parents form a board, and they help direct and decide how they're going to achieve results in the school. And then they report to the education board. They're accountable to the education board. They're accountable to the parents and other teachers. So thus the Professional Empowerment Act. As an aside, too, and the last part of the amendment dealt with changing the title of the bill as well.
Okay, further discussion? Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Chamberlain, I believe you that the education board would be elected, but I don't see that.
Well, the statute starts with subdivision 1. An education board has the same powers and duties as school board is defined in 123B02 and 123B09. And it goes on, some of these other chapters discuss roles, operations, functions, school board, and how they're brought into power. So it doesn't change how that works. So they're still, the school boards are still subject to some of the same processes, but they're still elected, so that doesn't change.
Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Council, could you just explain where that, is it in sections 123B02 that says that they'd be elected, or?
Ms. Stengel.
Mr.
Chair, Senator Sieben, let me grab the statute book and I'll get right back to you.
Thank you. And then while she's looking, can
Senator
I
Sieben.
Make another
sure.
point? This isn't a big deal, Senator Chamberlain, but on line 2.7 and 2.8, it says two choices in order, yes and no, must be clearly available to the voter.
Yes.
On our ballots here in Minnesota, the Secretary of State is, if I'm not mistaken, obligated, I don't know if it's in rule or statute, to rotate the order of the candidates in most cases. And I think I don't know about in order of yes or no, but I just find it's a little too prescriptive to say you have to put yes on top and no on the bottom, because there's research that shows what whoever is at the top of the ballot, at least as far as candidates go, has a slight advantage in terms of voters are more likely to check that choice. So I'd be more comfortable if you'd take out the words in order. And then they just have to follow whatever statute already governs the, or rulemaking that governs the order that's placed on the ballot.
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Senator Chamberlain.
Chair and Senator Sieben, we did strike that amendment. The amendment does strike that language because
sorry.
It does exactly what you said. The
okay.
Council found that in statute, that it's dealt with in statute, so we took that out.
Thank you.
Does anyone know when we run, does our name rotate on the ballot? Does. Further discussion?
Does.
Yes.
Ms. Stengel, I'm sorry. Ms. Stengel has an answer to Senator Sieben's question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Sieben, in 123B.09, it talks about school board membership, and it does talk about the board members being elected.
Okay.
Senator Sieben.
Mr. Chair, I have another point. On line 2.1, it says that you can petition your auditor, the county auditor, but only 15% of those voting can call for make cause for this proposal to come up to the voters in the next general election. I think that threshold is just really low. 15% seems pretty low in terms of what can trigger this whole change to come up before the voters, especially since the question that they're being proposed then later is not too descriptive of what that the school board shall the school board of the district convert to an education board. I don't think anyone here from the School Board Association is here, but they raised with me that they were uncomfortable with this 15% threshold. I don't know if you've had a chance to talk with them, but I was hoping you might consider boosting that 15% up to something less than half, but more than that.
Mr. Chair.
Chamberlain.
Mr. Chair and Senator Sieben, we did talk, and we did do some research, and some of the research I found was the highest of Minnesota statutes and the law, the highest number they have is 25%, and usually 25% is used for recall petitions, and when you have a more, you know, more serious issue, something of higher implication, then it goes down to as low as 15% in a bond issue. Referendum for a bond issue is 15%, and what was this number? So the lowest it goes is 15%. The highest it went was 25%, and thinking also, and we had a document here that the council found, 15% of eligible voters, the way it's written now is 15% of eligible voters who voted in the last election, eligible voters themselves would be a larger number. In the last election, school district election, that would be a little bit smaller area. I would be comfortable with 20%. Just because 20% would fall in line with the other statutes and code we have for that, this sort of thing. So I wouldn't be comfortable going to, 20% I would go to for eligible voters that voted in the last district election. And I think I'd be willing to do that, but not much higher because the others have a higher threshold for various reasons. This falls in line with that.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Sieben.
Is a school board election a general election?
No, not necessarily.
No, it's separate.
Ms. Stengel, do you have an opinion on that?
I do believe they usually are on the off year, but I'm not an authority on that.
Mr. Chair, some districts have chosen to put it on the general election year, but I think a majority of them still are in the off year.
So my point is just that 15 or 20% of those voting in the last if it was an off-year election, that'd be a really small number. Could be a really, you know, you already have low turnout in an off-year election, and then if you general
election. Senator Wolf.
Right. That's why I was trying to clarify if a school board election was a general election or not.
Apparently, it varies from school district to school district. They select their own election calendar, is that?
Mr. Chair, we gave them the authority to do that a few years back, or maybe 10 years back even, and some of them have chosen to do that. Cities and counties both got to have that choice, and sometimes a city will move, and then the school district doesn't want to bear the cost of the election by themselves, so they'll move too, but sometimes they'll stay, or vice versa. The city might stay, and the school board might move.
Senators, Sieben.
Thank you. Could we, Ms. Stengel, could you tell us what the definition of general election is? I understand they're off-year elections, but I don't know if an off-year election is a general election.
Like a few minutes to work on that?
Mr. Chair and Senator Steven, I'll double-check. I think there is a definition, but I believe a general election is an even-year election that falls on the first Tuesday after the first Monday in November, or however that goes.
Okay.
I'll pull up and see if there's a statute I can show you.
Senator Kielash.
Mr. Chair, Senator Chamberlain, one of the things that I'm a little confused of is the definition of an eligible voter. And that has to do with, we're talking about changing over site-specific schools. So does that mean an eligible voter for that is anybody in the city or anybody in a certain proximity to that school? Or how are we defining who's eligible to vote and what happens in that particular school?
Mr. Chair, I'm Senator Kielash. I don't have the exact definition of eligible voter, but I have some description of statute 200.039, petition requirements for ballot questions.
Mr. Chair, I guess it's not... That's not what I'm trying to get at. It's the geographical area that's included or not included is what I'm kind of trying to figure out.
I'm sorry, Mr. Keith.
The geographical area that's included or not included. So, I know who's eligible to vote, but within how do you
district? Sure, sure.
Eligible school.
Does that mean the whole school district? Okay. So one school in a school district can't be site governed. Is that what we're saying here then? Because I think it says the opposite of that. It says that any school in a district can be site governed, but that, how do you define who gets to vote for that particular site is my question.
Sure. Okay. I Mr. Chair.
Senator Chamberlain.
Senator Kielash, I see what you're saying. So I read this now, and it doesn't say in the last school district election is what you're saying. It should be for that school district. Is that what you're saying?
Well,
no.
Because this right now, I think, does not define.
No, Mr. Chair, it's like many school districts have multiple schools in them. Is the only way any one school can go to site govern is if the whole school district votes on it? And it's kind of saying that any school can make that choice is the way I read this, and maybe I'm reading this wrong, but it doesn't define who's eligible to vote for that one specific school then. So eligible voter is, you could have people outside the district voting or not voting for it.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Chamberlain.
Senator Kielash, I looking at this, I would agree with you. Perhaps we should write something in here that says to make sure that's the eligible voters within the school district.
Well,
for that election.
For that, by school, Mr. Chair, are you defining school district as the school board's purview, or are you the district that the school serves? I mean, some of the school districts have boundary lines for their elementary schools, for example. I don't know if that means that one school can change to site governed, or is that not something you're trying to do? The whole school district or nothing goes site governed?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, that is correct. And I think that's when we look at it that way, that is correct. It would be for the school district. The school board governs the school district. So it couldn't be a school can be a site governed school if it wants, but for an education board, for a board, school board to be switched, it would have to go to an education board. And to do that, you could do it by conversion or you could do it by the petition. So no, a school wouldn't be on its own as an education board. It'd be the school board that governs the school district. And so if we need some specific language to make sure it's just the school district, those eligible voters within that school district, then perhaps we can do that. But this is for the whole school district, not just separate schools.
Senator Steven, did you have a...
Oh, I was just trying to clarify.
Yeah, all of this.
So, Senator Kielash, this bill, if 15% of the eligible voters in the last general election submitted a petition, and then the entire school district, all the eligible voters within the school district, could convert the entire school district to an education board. You can't just convert high school in one corner of the school district to an education board. It's switching the whole school board to a different system of governance.
Okay.
I think this is why getting at more of the meat of it, why the School Board Association is opposed to this, because they feel that as elected members of the school district, they should have the ability as elected members to be able to set some of the governance structure for their district. And what Senator Chamberlain's bill would do, if I'm not speaking out of turn here, is allow through petition voters in the district to convert the whole, get rid of the school board basically, and have this
right.
Education.
Mr. Chair, I think I get that part of it, but when you start voting for the education boards, who gets to vote on that? If the whole school district is it just the parents of the people that have got kids going to the school, or how is that? I mean, that's where you start running into the.
Oh, Mr. Chair?
When you vote for school.
Senator Chamberlain.
Senator Kielash, and thank you, Senator Steven. The intent here is to simply have the people who voted, who are within that school district, who go to that school district to vote. That is the intent.
Right.
We want the people who are impacted. We want the parents to have the ability and choice to do these things and to empower them to do it. And the intent is to be able to allow them to do it through this method for those who live and have kids going to that school.
Mr. Chair.
One second. I don't know if this is going to make a difference, but Ms. Stengel has found a school board definition, a school board election definition that's different than what we were originally told. So do we want to hear that?
Well, yes.
Or doesn't it matter to your argument?
Yeah.
Let's get this over with. Mm-hmm. Okay, Ms. Stengel.
Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Looking at the elections that apply just to school boards, it says school district general election. The general election in each school district must be held on the first Tuesday after the first Monday in November of either the odd-numbered or the even-numbered year. So it looks like any time they have their election in a school board, it would be a general election, unless it's a sort of special election at a different time.
Ms. Stengel can answer that. But when under the education boards, we are using the election criteria for school boards. And what I don't get out of that is, how do you break that down so that only people that are being served by that particular school within a district are voting for the education board of that school? That's what's missing here. There's no language that defines who's eligible to vote for that education board the way I see it. But
Mr. Chair.
Senator Chamberlain.
If we all understand the intent here, we're not trying to pull a fast one on the
Well, I don't mean that.
If we can come up with a couple words here that, so that we know that it's just the people that live within that school district, you know, they have the franchise within that school district, they would be the ones eligible to vote.
Mr. Chair.
Senator.
Well, it's who's defining the lines around the school
Senator
the education board, not for the whole school board.
Mr. Chair, Senator Kielash.
I'm not trying to.
I know. Sorry, but maybe we should let Senator Wolf. She could probably help out more than I could right now.
Senator Wolf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just wondering if this would be help clarify language. Voters within the proposed education board district. So those who are going to be affected would be the ones that would be voting. So those who are going to be in the proposed education board would be the ones who would be voting.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Chamberlain.
Thank you, Senator Wolf. Again, the intent would be still in the same school district. We're just changing the name of the education board, from the school board to education board, to change that perception of that function. So it's still going to be the same district. So the idea is that those people who voted, who live within that school district, who vote for that, vote for the school board members, will be the same people that are eligible in voting for the education board. Does that make sense?
Senator Kielash.
Yeah, what I don't get is, if we're just changing the name from school board to education board, why do we need such a long amendment and long bill? Is part of my problem with it.
Well,
I think you're doing much more than that. You're saying that each school will be site governed.
Senator,
right?
Mr. Chair?
You're site governed, right? So that's the part that we're missing. If it's site governed, those people that are elected to the education board ought to be somehow connected to that site-governed school.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Chamberlain.
The Education Board, again, this is we're focusing on the election piece here. The Education Board will be will be in charge of the same number of schools. The schools don't change. If you have a school district, ISD 12, and it's got 15 schools in it, and the citizens in that school district who are eligible to vote and voted in the last election, they petition and they say, we want to go to an education board. On the next election, it goes on the ballot. They say, yes, we want to do it. The name changes. They go into a transition period. And all those schools that were in that district still are in that district, and they answer to that education board. The education board is here, and they still have accountability agreements with all these schools. The schools are still there. They just it's a different management style. That's all we're doing. We're not changing the number of schools.
Senator Chamberlain, the question I have is, what is the district they'll be voting from? What is the geographic area?
This the school,
it's
Mr.
The
Chair.
The whole school district? What about the site? And the site-based won't be electing their own board?
It's the school district.
Oh.
The school school board is being converted to an education board. It's just a different management style. So all those 15 schools will still be there. The management changes. And so the schools are there. They just make agreements with the education board for outcomes. So the schools are still there. They're still functioning. Same school district.
So if I understand this, the site-based education board will be elected from the whole school district?
Mr. Chair?
No.
The education board will, if there's seven people on the school board and then the people decide to convert to an education board, those seven people will still be on the education board, and they'll still be in charge until the next election when they're up for election. And they will, so the site-governed schools, all those schools will become site-governed schools. They aren't elected. They're still the principals. They're hired the same way. Just that we get more accountability.
So, Senator Roebling.
Okay, I'm trying to, I think I've got it.
Okay.
So the school district residents will make the decision whether it would be a regular school board or an education board, the whole district. But then the actual schools themselves, could they, then they would have to be kind of self-governing, or they, okay, so the school, the education board would still set levies. If they want to have a referendum, they would still do that sort of thing. But then what would they still have a superintendent who would oversee the whole district, or would each school have, like a council that would hire their own principals and staff potentially?
What, Mr. Chair and Senator Roebling, what this does is, it, you're really close, is that what this does is that you change the school board to education board, and you shrink the administrative funds to 5%, and then the 95% gets allocated out to the schools, and the schools become semi-autonomous. They're under the same rules and laws as the chartered schools. They get more autonomy. The principals hire, and the teachers and the parents get together. They decide the policies. The connection between the there's some administrative functions that the education board does, but the schools are still responsible and accountable to the education board through an accountability agreement, outcome agreement. So the school, high school, is accountable to the board. They're accountable to the teachers and students and parents. So you have like little divisions of a company. The school board is this chair of the board chairs, and the rest are the they're operating independently, autonomously to get outcomes that they want.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Roebling,
Senator Chamberlain, are there some districts that do this now where they have site councils kind of run their own schools?
There's
Senator Chamberlain.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair and Senator Roebling, there's one school school in Minneapolis, I believe now, that has a site-governed school. Site-governed statute was created in Minnesota in 2009, I believe it was, or 2007. There's no other place in the country that operates like this. Indianapolis was thinking about it. D.C. is close, but it's not really the model. What this does is creates autonomy and independence for the schools to achieve better outcomes. Empowered, it follows the title, professional empowerment. It empowers the teachers and the principals to create their own solutions and come up with their own with the outcomes to satisfy the parents, the students, and the education board.
Senator Kailash.
Mr. Chair, so is what I don't understand is why do we need to change the name of the school board to education board just to do this? Why can't the school board do it on its own, number one? Number two, because now you have each school spending, hiring, whatever, with very little management. Now the elected officials that you want to hold accountable to make sure the schools are doing well have hardly any control over what's happening in the school, because the principal of that school or the faculty of that school or the janitor of that school is making decisions about what's going on within that site. So it seems like you got the idea you want it closer to where the school is and people there, but the accountability still goes back to the education board for how that's run without they're really having any hands-on decision-making about the site. That is the way I see this, but, you know, correct me if I'm wrong.
Okay. Mr. Chair. Senator Kielash, I was hoping to avoid the discussion about the broader issue. I'd love to discuss the broader issue and concept of this bill that some people have been working on for a couple of years. It's a great, innovative, empowering piece of legislation that will empower professionals at the local level. We got to stop thinking about who's going to be in charge of the teachers and who's going to regulate them and hold them accountable. Parents and school boards, parents and the education board and other teachers will hold them accountable in the professional organization. This is a model that allows innovation and creativity by loosening some of the restrictions and regulations and those of the school. But so, this has been fully vetted in the Education Committee for the education and components of this, and it passed out of the Education Committee unanimously without any dissent except for the 15% on the voting.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Kielish, so, Senator McGuire.
Yeah, so the but in the end, the only people that voters can hold responsible are the Education Board. Is that correct? And they're having less say over what happens at each school site.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Chamberlain.
Mr. Chair and Senator Kielash, that's the absolutely opposite wrong thing, the way to think about it. The education board members are elected by the population, by the citizens in the school district. But the accountability is there with the teachers accountable. The parents, if you're a parent now and you have an issue, you can go to the principal or the school. But ultimately, they don't hold the ultimate power. You got to go back to the school board or go up to the MDE. This way, the parents will be on the board at the site-governed school, if that's the way they want to set up, with the teachers, developing programs, models, and ideas to deliver the services and meet the needs of the local community. So it's the opposite. They will be much more accountable to the citizens and the parents and the community, as well as being accountable to each other professionally and to the education board.
Mr. Chair, that gets to my point. How do those parents get on the site board of the school?
Well,
how do they? I mean, is that an elected process? If that's an elected process, who's eligible to vote for that site-based board?
Mr. Chair and Senator Kielash, that is beyond that. In my humble opinion, those issues and the rest of this thing have been dealt with by the Education Committee and vetted that way, and they were vetted last year. And that really isn't the purview of this committee. The purview of this committee is the election of sub 2, sub 3, clause A and B, are they legitimate, valid, and will they work? I'd be happy to have the discussion about the creative, innovative ideas here. But if you go through this piece of legislation, it explains and discusses and lays out the process for getting the site-governed schools. School setup, site-governed schools are governed under different statutes, and they can tell you how you set them up, who's on the board, and how you can do it.
Senator Chamberlain, I disagree with you, but I think how those people are elected, if they are elected, is in the purview of this committee.
Well, the purview of this, Mr. Chair, the people on the site-governed schools, they're not elected. They're ISD 12, Centennial High School, principal and voluntary members go on the board. They're not elected. The only people elected that changes, nothing changes with the election of the board. School board members were elected. Education board members will be elected. We're just changing the name of the education board. and we're changing how the management sets up, and we're giving the schools and that district autonomy to function on their own. This is difficult because nobody in the country does this, and this isn't how we do. This is not how we do education in this state. So the people on those site-governed boards are not elected.
Senator McGuire was, I think, waiting.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm trying to understand this, so I appreciate the questions. Senator Kulesh, so there's a local school, and the parents, you say that there's somehow, there's a place in here where they're elected to the site board.
No, Mr. Chair and Senator McGuire, there's no place in here where it says, or in the site governed statutes, where it says that the principals, a site governed school is simply a school. It would be ISD 12 High School, Centennial High School, stays at Centennial High School, it stays with the principal. But the principal says, well, let's get some volunteers, teachers, and others on the board, and they have a process in the site governed school statutes to do that. Okay. But if they're not elected, they're just volunteers from the school, the community.
Okay, so, Mr. Chair, so if a group of people, and I understand that you want local control, so say a group of parents don't like the way things are happening at the school,
mm-hmm.
so right now they would go to a school board, or they might go to the principal even now and talk to the principal, talk to the teachers and say, is there something we can do? And they might get referred up to the school board. But in this plan, they would go right to the principal, or they would go to the local school, and then if the principal didn't do what the parents wanted, then would the parents have recourse up to the school board? Or how do they hold, how do the families of this school district hold that school accountable? Because they don't elect those people. they don't hire the, as far as I understand this, they don't hire the principal or the teachers. So if they don't agree with what they're doing and they want to hold them more accountable, how do they have any say in what they do?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Chamberlain.
I make a request to lay this over to discuss it more clearly with all these people here.
Yes.
This is clearly, it was my intent to focus simply and clearly on the election on those two, on that subdivision three. I'd be happy to discuss this with everybody. This is a wonderful idea. It's empowering to the local communities, to the parents. It'll improve education. It will create innovation and success in the local schools. So I'd be happy to discuss everybody else with this with all of you. But in education committee, we took 30 minutes. They discussed it. They vetted it. It's been out there for 2 years. I'd hate to have this thing go down because we can't get past sub A and B.
We have a couple members that are persisting with questions. Should we take them, Senator Chamberlain? Is that all right?
That's fine, okay, Mr.
Senator
Chair.
Wolf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was simply going to make a comment. I'm feeling Senator Chamberlain's frustration. We did go through this and vetted the whole thing in education, and I think the frustration is this group is coming in. We're supposed to be looking at one little part, which is the election portion of it,
mm-hmm.
and so maybe we need to add an hour's, bring in all the testifiers and go through the whole thing we did in education. But this was already seen through education. It was already passed out of education, I believe, unanimously. And so the portion we're supposed to be looking at is the education portion. So if we're going to backtrack and look at the whole policy of education, that's going to be a whole different discussion because we're coming in, you guys are coming in asking questions after not having been given the presentation.
Excuse
and
me.
So I understand the frustration.
Senator
Mr. Chair,
I know you got here
my
late,
question
but
was on the, election.
The questions were related, I think, at least mine were, to the election. I'm not opposed to the bill at all. I was just trying to understand the process, and I think it was election oriented.
I thought mine was on elections. I was actually asking about the election process.
What kind of election and how much of one we weren't sure. So, Senator Eaton.
Where my confusion in this comes in is on section 3.32 or line 3.32 and 3.33, where it says that the education board and its members shall deal with and control school sites through the governance body of the school. Now, who is the governance body of the school and who is electing them?
I'm sorry, Senator Eaton, where are you looking?
Page 3, 32 and 33.
It's a proposal for the education board and its members shall deal with. Mr. Chair.
Senator Chamberlain.
Come on up. Sub 7 that you're referring to on page 3 is talks about the relationship of the site governed schools with the education board.
Right.
A site governed school, think of it as your local elementary school that was in the district before it changed owners, before it changed management. And what this is talking about here is the school, the education board is limited in how it can control and how it can dictate the outcomes. What happens is when they you create this governance model for schools, what they're doing is the education board, if you read through the whole bill, the education board sets up the outcome and the accountability agreements with the site-governed school. And then they say, okay, site-governed school, go teach your kids the way you see fit, the best way possible to get this outcome. And then it lets that school, that principal, and that school, with those teachers, with the parents, develop the best processes they know how to get the outcomes and meet the agreement and the outcome agreements with the education board. Ultimately, the site government school is accountable to the education board and to the teachers. So the site government school does not perform, then they answer to the education board, which is with a form of school board. So what we're talking about here in sub 7 is simply that we don't want the education board or the state really meddling around too much. We want to give the school the freedom, the power to achieve success. That's what that's about. So it's not about the only place in here where anybody's elected is the old school board, which is now the education board. There's no elections anywhere else for the site-governed schools, whether it's in the site-governed statutes or in this legislation. Only the school board.
Thank you.
Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Chamberlain, I admit I was on the education committee, and I don't think we really vetted this in, as much as we should, because there are some good questions that are being raised. But I wonder if we couldn't hear from the School Board Association, since they have a vested interest in this and didn't testify in committee, I don't remember last time, or in the education committee.
Mr.
Please
Chair.
Please introduce yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair. If I may, for just 1 second.
Senator Chamberlain.
Can we have a minute for a testifier here to explain something about the site governance school?
Chair, members, my name is Tim McDonald. I'm a fellow at the Center for Policy Studies, and our education project called Education Evolving was centrally involved in the creation of the chartering law and the site governed schools law. And listening to the discussion here, I think it would help to have a basic primer on the difference between charter and site governed. Chartered schools are their own legal entity. They have a board of a 501c3 that creates a school. A site-governed school was created to be an autonomous in-district school. It has a site council, but not a formal board. It's an informal council comprised of teachers and community members and parents. And so they oversee the school. They come up with a performance agreement with the district board. And so for a school to become site-governed, a group of teachers and parents and community members create a proposal for how the school will be run. Think of a charter proposal. But instead of proposing this to the state, which is what a charter school does, they propose it to the school district board and come up with an agreement with the district board. And that performance agreement is how the school is held accountable by the board. And so what you would have in a education board, a district governed by an education board, is the school district board decides to convert itself, or the referendum converts it, to an education board. So you have the same district boundaries governed by the same laws, the same statute as a school district, except the governance structure changes. Every school in the district will have a site council. And the site council is responsible for making management decisions of the school at the school site. And then the board holds the site council accountable to their performance agreement.
Thank you, Mr. McDonald. Senator Sieben.
Mr. Chair and Mr. McDonough, I appreciate you jumping in here, but you just confused me even more now, because if the education board is composed of informal members, parents, teachers, the education board creates site boards within the different schools.
Chair, Senator Sieben, a site-governed school has a site council, which is an informal board.
That reports to the education board?
Right. The education board is the formal board of the district.
Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't know if we're going to continue, if we're going to lay this over, as Senator Chamberlain was wondering, or we're going to hear from the school boards too. But I am not opposed to having a lot more involvement by the schools, by the sites. I actually think that's good to have the sites be involved in the work of the school. I am concerned, though, with it's still unclear to me, you know, that you could put a number of people on that site board, and then I'm just not sure what kind of authority they have. If they don't like what's going on at the school, if you get a few people that just disagree with a couple things that are going on, then could they go to the school board and say to the school board, we don't like this, or the education board, excuse me, we don't like what's going on here, then the education board would sort of do a follow-up study of that then. So is that how that would work, to sort of be the checks and balances? Because sometimes you do get this vocal minority that really want to change something within a school itself. You know, you want to make sure you've got sort of more overall agreement.
Mr. Chair, Senator, that's a question about...
Could you state your name one more time, please?
Tim McDonald, fellow at the Center for Policy Studies. That's a question getting into, I think, the statute for site-governed schools. And I can try to answer that the best I can, as I have quite a bit of exposure, but I'm not an expert in the site-governed school statute itself. The site council has an agreement with the district board, which is a contract, and they review that annually. And if a parent has an issue, if a teacher has an issue, they would go to the principal, to the site council. But the agreement itself could not be altered unless both parties of the agreement chose to alter that.
Senator Kulesh.
Yeah, just to follow up. So what I don't quite get is, if there's a voluntary site governing council, if the school doesn't meet the goals that they agreed to with the new education board, who gets fired?
Mr. McDonald.
Mr. Chair, Senator, I don't know if anyone gets fired. It would be up to the school district directors, who in this case would be education board directors. It'd be up to them to decide if the school is in breach of their performance agreement, what do they do about that? That would be they could replace a school leader. They could bring in a coach to help the school leader. That would be a very practical example of how the directors of the district would have a more clear role in the relationship with the school. They would say, you perform against these measures of our performance agreement, and if you are not performing against them, then we'll take action. I think of the way a corporation's organized. You have a chief executive, and then you have the directors of individual business units. Each school in the district is an individual business unit.
Yeah.
Further discussion?
Can we hear from the school board?
Sure. State your name.
Yeah, absolutely. Mr. Chair, my name is Kirk Schneidewind, on staff with the Minnesota School Boards Association. And those are some of the fundamental questions that we have. And as practitioners who are dealing with this on the ground and trying to answer our members' questions, those are the kind of questions. And for example, in that one, we have employees who are protected by the continuing contract law. And we would not be able to dismiss them based on their on student achievement or student performance. They would be protected by that. So, but to the bill on the election issue, and I don't know, I apologize for being late on this, but I mean, we believe that the threshold is too low. I mean, we absolutely believe that, and that's something we're concerned about. We believe 15% is too low, and that if the issue, it is permissive for school boards to do this as it presently is stated here, but we also have a site governance statute in law right now that I'm not aware of any school districts who have done that or any schools that have done that, and it'd be certainly, if there were, it'd be less than two. And so the model is certainly out there, and it's certainly an option, but the piece that concerns us is the election piece. And I think that you've nailed the issue that we're concerned about is because it directs the board to only communicate with the site board. We can't, it's like there's a barrier there that we're unable to have a communication with our staff members. So we would be concerned about that. And remember, the school board, when they go out for referendums, they're accountable to the public. And when you have 95% of the revenue going to sites who are not accountable to the public, I would contend that that is a serious issue to be considered. And you've nibbled around that issue a little bit, but that's something that if you want accountability, you want your elected officers or elected officials to have that accountability issue. We believe that the ballot question is certainly biased as well. And if you read the language on page 2627, that it says that the school board operates through a central office as though it's some monolithic piece that cannot move. And an education board, however, oversees agreements with schools that are responsible for their own operation. So we believe that is not an accurate description. We do believe we see in Minneapolis and St. Paul and some other metropolitan school districts move to a site-based model that may not be exactly like this. But what this piece for us really prescribes a management style that school boards could presently adopt if they wanted to. And John Carver is a known researcher on the issue of policy governance who talks about creating the policies, setting the framework, setting the course, setting the goals, and letting the sites do that. And boards can check in and check on that agreement and check on how the performance is doing. And I will guarantee you that school districts do that. They have data retreats. They sit and go through the reading scores, the math scores, and talk to the teachers and the building principals about performance standards. And if it's not working, then they go through and find strategies that are going to improve student achievement. So boards are student achievement directed. And I'm afraid that to perceive us as central, inflexible units is not accurate. And so I think that we have serious concerns about this issue. About the ability of 15% to just flip it on the side, dealing with a number of other statutes within the school employment law that aren't addressed here, and we certainly are concerned with this.
Senator Chamberlain.
Mr. Chair, I'm willing to go up with that number, as I stated some time ago, but statutes and other precedent here suggest not more than 25%. With that, I'm willing to do that in the amendment, but I'd like Mr. McDonald to respond to our testifier.
Mr. McDonald.
Mr. Chair, members, you know, this idea originally came up with Senator Olson, Senator Pogomiller, Senator Scheid, Senator Chamberlain, because right now school boards cannot do what this bill enables them to do. Subdivision 8 of 123B09, the statute for school board, says the duties of a school board, the board must superintend and manage the schools of the district, adopt rules for their organization, governance, and instruction. So the board must superintend and manage the schools. Within an education board, the board doesn't manage the schools. It oversees performance agreements with schools that manage themselves. So conceptually, it's just a flip. And then we anticipate the implementation of this. You'll have at most one or two districts that the superintendents and the boards decide this is something they want to do. They'll be thinking with an enterprising mindset, and they'll be interested and eager and willing to answer the many questions that come up with this different way of managing a district. And if changes to legislation to the statute need to occur, they can come back and request changes.
Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move to delete Section 1, Subdivision 3. I think there are enough questions raised over the election piece, whether it be the threshold or the ability to the language question on it. And I just think that if a school board wants to do this, they'd still be able to do it under Subdivision 2. So I'd like to move to delete Subdivision 3 in Section 1.
Senator Sieben moves to delete Subdivision 3 in Section 1. Senator Chamberlain.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I would not view that as a friendly amendment. This is about local control. And if we take that away from the citizens and the community and the parents, we're going to gut half of the reason for the innovation and empowerment of the teachers and the schools. This is ultimately about parents and students' outcome and not about serving schools. It's about outcomes and changing the outcomes for the students and the parents in the district and otherwise. If we take out the voting piece, I'm willing to go up on the number and the threshold. If we take out the voting piece, we take away that empowerment. I would not support that amendment.
Do any of your witnesses care to comment on that, Mr. McDonald? What the impact?
Well, I would say, Mr. Chair, it's just the notion of, I mean, it just coming from an organization that has been involved in the choice initiatives of Minnesota, starting with open enrollment, PSEO, chartering, the creation of the site governed schools law. We see this as one more step in the direction of creating the conditions where it's more likely innovation will occur. And the notion of moving decision-making and control closer down to the school site is the idea of the local school-based control. And then moving decision-making closer to the community is the idea behind the elected conversion. And some communities may decide that after decades and decades of very poor performance of schools in a district, they're just fed up and want to try something different. And so this is a mechanism for the community to basically just take the initiative.
Sir.
Senator Kayla.
Sure. You've admitted that there's only a couple of schools that are operating underneath this management style. So there is no success story to build on for an informed voter. You don't know if this system is a great idea that either works or doesn't work. You only know that it's the next whiz-bang thing in education to try to make schools more accountable. Now, when you put this out to the voters and you say we're going to do this kind of thing, you're kind of selling them a pig and a poke because you don't really have the data to back up the success or failure of these site-based education systems.
Mr. Chair, point of order. I thought we were dealing on the amendment.
That's what I'm dealing with. So it's.
Are we discussing the validity of deleting sub three, or are you pontificating on the validity of the creative innovation? If we took your approach respectfully, Mr. Kailash, we'd be pounding rocks along the river shore to light sparks.
Mr. Chamberlain, since you want to call us misters instead of senators. What I'm talking about is you're asking people to vote on a system of governing schools that has no proven track record but sounds good. And the problem with it is, and that goes to the amendment and the threshold that we're talking about in that amendment, and that's what I'm talking about. So without that proven track record, allowing citizens to vote for something that they don't have any clue as to whether it's going to work or not is not a great idea. The rest of the bill allows for the school boards to function this way if they choose to and can move forward in that direction. At least let's get a track record on this before we just throw it out there for the public to go after with the the hopes that it's going to be successful.
Hey, Senator Sieben renews her motion to delete Subdivision 3, Section 1. Senator Sieben.
I just wondered if we could hear from the School Board Association since on what they think of my amendment.
Certainly.
Mr. Chair, Senator Sieben, I apologize for that. We would certainly support that. I mean, we think that if this is flexible, we're not afraid of the voters. I mean, I understand that. I mean, school board members are accountable. And I think just that the threshold is too low, and if we're not going to have the threshold, then if higher, I would certainly support a piece that would remove that subdivision. And I would also point out, and I failed to mention, is that if you get into this, if the public vote, 15% of the registered voters get into this, there is no exit strategy. You are in it, and there's no turning it around. And so I would be concerned that boards may get into this and find this not to their liking, and they may look to us and say, hey, how are we going to get out of this? And so I would support Senator Sieben's amendment, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Mr. McDonald.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm interested in making sure everyone understands this clearly, and I think we're making progress on that. I think the ballot question itself is I'm sorry, that's the second part of the question I wanted to address, but what was your main question again?
My point on this is that
I remember now.
Record to build right. on, and so this looks like another, I mean, the voters are having an opportunity to change the whole school system without having a proven track record to build on. It sounds good, but there's no proven track record. And so the school boards can initiate all the other things in it without having to deal with the whims of the voters on a major change in how sites are governed.
Yeah, Chair, Mr. Senator, there are 160 chartered schools in the state that are schools that make their own site-based decisions. They're not yet site-governed schools. But the notion of a school figuring out how to run itself is well-tested, and many schools do it very well. What has not been tried anywhere in the country, and you are right about this, is a school district now responding competitively to the chartering sector and creating the conditions within the district that are reflective of the chartering sector in the sense that the schools are autonomous and make their own decisions, which is what the chartering sector has. And many districts are in the gray area because they structure themselves in such a way that principals make decisions. And so there is a big gray area. This gives districts the option then to go the whole way and to say the schools will all make their own decisions. So no district has done this, that's right, but I feel basically comfortable knowing that it's possible because so many charter schools run themselves as individual schools.
Thank you. To the Sieben motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No.
No.
Motion does not prevail and fails. Okay. Did you want to lay over your bill, Senator Chamberlain? Was that what you were still...
Senator, Mr. Chair, I'll make an oral amendment.
Okay, Senator Chamberlain, can you give us your oral amendment?
I'd like to strike 15 on line 2.1 and put 30. Line 2.1, strike 15, put 30.
Ms. Stangle, do you have that amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I do. On page 2, line 1, delete 15 and insert 30.
Discussion. Senator Sieben.
Mr. Chair, now that we have a better definition of what the last general election, that can include a school district election, which I know school district elections in off years can have 9 or 10% turnout. We can hear more testimony about that, but 30% of 10% of people of eligible voting, people who are voting, that's still a really small percentage to be able to change the entire governance of a school board. And so I still think that that's too low.
Mr. Chair and Senator Sieben, state statute, state precedent is 30% is above the highest margin. And that's above recalls, above local bond issues, things of that sort. And I'm just following along the lines of local precedent and trying to stay in line with that, and not make it too difficult for local residents to have an impact in the local schools, give them a voice.
Okay, to the chamberlain, Senator Clemmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm catching up. I was down in the Judiciary Committee. Could you explain the oral amendment on the line?
What I just mentioned?
Yeah, sir? What you just moved.
I said line 2.1, I changed 15% to 30% for the petition amount, 30% of the eligible voters in the last general election, voted in the last general election.
Senator Chamberlain, 30% in the last general election, so.
General includes a school board. Off year. We already checked.
Does that mean in an off year?
Yeah.
Is that considered a general election?
We can, Mr. Chair and Senator Limmer, if we want to add language and make it the on year, that would be fine as well.
Well, if it was an on year, then I would want you to move to the 15%. We don't want to make it so difficult. It's for consideration, isn't it?
Yes, Senator Lynn.
It's not for changing just because 15% of the population that voted. That doesn't mean that you're going to change. It means it's subject to a decision to be made. Is that correct? And usually in election issues, we generally refer, when we're using a factor to a general election, we mean in an on-year general election. And that's why the factor is usually relatively low, but not so low that it would be impossible to reach, but at the same time, it was a balance point. And so moving to 30% sometimes can get rather difficult. Yeah. And you're not making the definite decision at that time. And I wouldn't necessarily, I honestly believe that general election for the purposes of the past historical reference has always been an on-year general election.
Thank you, sir.
And I would suggest you alter your amendment to that effect.
I'm Mr. Chair.
Senator Chamberlain, Senator Sieben, Senator Limmer, we have a clarification that makes a big difference in this. Okay. Senator Ms. Stangle, could you describe what you just told us?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Minnesota Statute 200.039, which falls into the general election rules, talks about when there's a petition and how you determine who can sign the petition and how you count them. And I'll just read part of this. It says, the statute must not be construed to mean that the petition must be signed by a number of current voters equal to the required percentage specified in the statute. And the more important part comes next. The statute must not be construed to restrict eligibility to sign the petition only to those who are eligible to cast ballots or who did cast ballots in the previous election. So basically what that's saying is if only 10 people voted in the last election, you can't hold it to those people, the statute is telling you. Instead, that it must be construed to mean it has to be signed by a number of current voters equal to whatever percent it is we decide on. So there's a statutory construction piece at play here as well.
It's not very clear, is it?
That didn't help.
So that needs a lot more now. We should look at that.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Chamberlain,
I would withdraw my previous amendment, and I will offer 20% on year. So that raises the bar. I'd rather have it lower, but it raises the bar to hopefully satisfy some of the colleagues and the board. 20% on year. It's a little harder, so and it is, again, it doesn't automatically enforce a change.
Senators Eaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To Senator Limmer, I would like to point out it's page 2, line 10, where it says, it is affirmative, a school board must convert its schools by September 1st of the calendar year following the election. That is not an optional thing in this bill.
So,
Senator Chamberlain.
Mr. Chair and Senator Eaton, again, 20% of eligible voters in that district, that's a high threshold, and it's
put the question on the ballot.
To put the question on the ballot. And putting the question on the ballot, that's what it does. Yes, if it wins, then they have to switch. But this is 20% to put the question on the ballot of yes or no. And then at the general election, then you have everybody coming in to make that decision. So the petition is only to get it on the ballot and then have the people vote on it after an informed debate. And then if they win in that election, then the board has to flip.
Mr. Chair, just
Senator Kalish.
For clarification, the on year election, I'm not sure if that's a technical term, but I was going to suggest that we change it to even year election. So in the 2-year cycle, it would be either. Is that or is that not, Ms. Stengel, is that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Kalish, I would also go with even year instead of on year.
And just
Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to clarify, when are school board elections usually? Are they any? Yeah, I guess
they can be anywhere.
They can be any time.
Yeah.
Okay.
If even year elections, we at least have House members running. And
okay.
Not Mr. McDonald. It's Mr.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Chamberlain.
I withdraw my amendment, make an immediate request to lay it on the table.
How about if we just lay it over?
Please.
Okay. I'm going to file 1094. Just lay it over. Yeah. And we're not going to do Senate file 2415 this evening. We're going to lay that. Well, that doesn't have to be laid over, does it? We're not going to hear it today.
Maybe we should take up the Vikings stuff.
Look, John.
What anything else to do?
It's kind of disappointing.
All right. With that, we will adjourn for the evening.
Roger, you expressed a lot right there.
We feel your pain, Roger.